Ladies and gentlemen, friends of George Moore and Bob Sarnoff, and I hope of mine, notwithstanding what I'm putting you through this evening, but I must explain that these things happen in the Senate of the United States from time to time, though it's the first time this has happened to me in connection with a function relating to my campaign, in this whole campaign. And I feel just terrible about it. I hope you will understand that we are voting on the final action, the conference report on the higher education bill, which determines what students and institutions will receive from the federal government in the way of loans and guarantees and other forms of facilitation and support for the next fiscal year. We are deadlocked on the vote. How it will be resolved, I don't know, but every vote counts, and hence I could not leave. So I hope you'll forgive me and give me your attention for just a few minutes. May I say that I share particularly with George and Bob a great and vital interest in the private economic system of the United States. I've spent my life learning and working and respected it, and I believe that it has the potential for doing a great deal, which government does today, and with enormous effect upon the government machinery and upon the economic and social questions which are involved. So this election, when this particular issue becomes so relevant, is a matter of great concern to me, and also the opportunities which it affords in view of really a lifetime of living with this issue are also loom very large in my considerations. And I know, of course, they interest you very greatly. We must consider where the business community will fit in respect of what's called the reindustrialization of the United States, and about such monumental problems in that connection as the people's health, the people's education, as well as inflation and jobs. This is one of the great reasons why I felt that this was a time when I could not yield all of the advantages which 24 years of seniority had given me in the Senate, where the people of New York have kept me longer than any other senator in New York State's history, and all of the knowledge and expertise and relationships which had been built up in that time, at a moment of such a critical content to the people of the United States. Now, this is quite apart from the whole economic system of the world, of which we are such a critical part, the OPEC challenge in terms of dependence of essential energy by the United States on the OPEC countries, and the dangers to the peace of the world posed by the situation of the Soviet Union and ourselves in respect of Soviet aggressiveness in places like Africa and other parts of the world, now in Afghanistan so vividly, the Soviet mischief-making, as in the Middle East, and the general effort to erode the United States position everywhere. And so I undertook to run again, simply because with all of the advantages which the people had given me, I could not walk away from the job under the circumstances we face today. Now, the privileges of the Senate are such that it can play a very critical role in all of these matters. And when one learns how coalitions are put together, how measures may be passed, and learns the art of bridging the gap between different points of view, as I have, in delicate and highly controversial matters, it becomes critically important to use those values for our people. people, and that is what I'm purposing to do. My problems in respect to the campaign, I'm sure you know about. I have a Republican primary, which I've never had before. That comes to a vote next Tuesday. And in the meantime, there's a vast expense for radio and television, for mailings and telephonings and advertisings and travel and running a big office, which is absolutely essential under the circumstances. Under the present federal law, separate monies have to be raised for that purpose. And so my friends have brought you here together to help me toward that end. And this is a time that it counts. Each individual may contribute up to $1,000 for the primary, which comes Tuesday, and up to $1,000 for the general election, which follows, and both contributions may be made at the same time if clearly indicated for that purpose. And I hope very much that you will see fit at the time when it is most needed to support me in these endeavors. I might say that the American people show every desire for a change at the head of the national administration. And if one should come, and that seems very likely right now, I would have an enhanced role as having a president of my party in the White House. And it is also entirely conceivable under present circumstances that the Republicans could control the Senate and that I could become the chairman of the Committee on Foreign Relations. This would give an unparalleled opportunity for the concepts of individual opportunity without regard to sex or race or creed or color or ethnicity, subjects to which I've devoted a great part of my life. And it would also give an opportunity for a recognition of the other half of the beliefs of Republicans in the efficacy of the private enterprise system, or the free enterprise system, being able to operate in the public interest to do much of what government has been doing for so long. I think particularly of the training of youth and the introduction of youth to new jobs in private enterprise, introducing them into the working economy, which is such a problem for us. I think of daycare centers for women who work, and 50% of American women are now working. I think of a true plan to deal with the people's health, which is getting far beyond their means today in terms of the millions of workers who are under health plans and the organization for that purpose in the private business system. These are some of the opportunities as I see them, and I wish very much to be permitted to continue to work to make them into reality. So I hope very much that I may have your support. I know because of George Moore and Bob Sarnoff, I have your interest. And again, I beg you to forgive me for not being with you myself, except with my voice, but with me all my life. Duty has had the first call, and I am in Washington, I am in the Senate, and I'm trying to do what the people sent me down there to do. And I just happen to be caught at this particular moment, in that particular time slot. And there's just nothing I can do but hope that you will forgive me and that you will support me. Thank you very much for coming, and thank you very much for listening in this way.
board with us. We decided to have our breakfast up here in the Netherlands Club because for many years this Englishman to my right put it all over the largest Dutch voting block in America, and was elected many times, as you know, with substantially and almost essentially a Dutch vote. The Netherlands Club is one of the last of the Dutch clubs, I guess, probably on the East Coast, and it we thought that was very appropriate. Purpose is not to be concealed. The purpose is to shake you down for a lot of money to support someone who is terribly important to you and terribly important to the state of New York and, we believe, our country. Before, when I had the privilege of addressing some of you, I described Jack Javits as a treasure of New York, and it is a treasure that we can ill afford to lose now when times are going to be particularly tough for the Northeast and for our country. And I'm proud to be associated with Jack Javits' efforts for re-election. I'm equally proud to introduce to you President of the United States, former President of the United States, Gerald Ford.
Thank you very much, Al. I am deeply grateful that all of you came here so early in the morning. And I do feel at home in the Dutch Club. My old congressional district had 65% to 70% people of a Dutch heritage, and they were always very kind and very supportive, despite my differing background. They're great, great people, and I'm deeply indebted to them. Yesterday, I began a rather arduous next 2 months. Betty and I, after a very delightful summer in Vail, Colorado, we are embarking on a major effort on behalf of primarily good friends of mine. And I asked my staff last night to add up what I was going to do the next 60 days. I'll visit 30 states, 29 congressional districts, 14 senatorial races, 4 gubernatorial races, 10 Republican Party events, 10 different dates on behalf of Reagan and Bush. I'll be on the road 53 out of 60 days. But let me add the bottom line. There is no senatorial, congressional, gubernatorial, or presidential race that I feel more deeply about than whatever help I can give on behalf of my long and very dear friend, Senator Jack Javits. Our friendship goes back to the day that I was sworn in as a member of the House of Representatives, January 3, 1949. Jack, at that time, was a member of the House, 4 years? And over that span of time, our friendship has matured, grown, deepened. I have seen Jack Javits as a member of the House of Representatives and subsequently as a member of the United States Senate perform extraordinarily well on legislative matters of vital importance to this country, as well as to the state of New York. Jack may be more liberal than I, but I have found in talking with Jack on matters of real substance, whether it's domestic or international, there's nobody that I have ever met in the political arena who has a more acute understanding mind as to what ought to be done And I say that as honestly and as straightforwardly as I possibly can. When I was president for 30 months, Jack Javits was a tower of strength in some of the very difficult problems that we faced. And Jack never wavered, never backed off, and I'm sure at some jeopardy to his own political career, because we had to do certain things that were to some extent unpalatable to overcome the problems that had generated in the years before I did become president. So on the basis of competence, on the basis of experience, on the basis of total integrity, I can stand before you or anybody in the state of New York or otherwise and say, as Al said, that Jack Javits is a treasure, not only to the state of New York, but to the country as a whole. It seems to me that we ought to be, in addition, very pragmatic. It's fine on some occasions to feel very deeply ideologically. But in this political arena in which we all live and have to work, the pragmatism is an essential ingredient as to the individual who ought to be either your congressman, your senator. And let me put it very bluntly. The people of New York, the city as well as the state, if they have Jack Javits for the next 6 years, they will have one of the most, if not the most, influential person who can be helpful in the practical problems that have to be solved, whether they're ideologically liberal or conservative, Republican or Democrat. I know a little bit about how the system works down there. Have a person with Jack's stature, who Democrats, Republicans, liberals, or others can go to, gives them a window that helps to solve those problems that have to be resolved. Now let's take the other side of the coin. Send a newcomer down to the Congress of the United States, who has to open a new office, who has to get acquainted, who has to learn the rules, who has to know things are done. It will take a considerable practical period of time. And in the meantime, the state of New York and the city of New York are in limbo. They only have half of their delegation in the United States Senate who can do things for them. So I'm delighted to be here because I feel so strong that those of us who don't live in New York, I feel fortunate to have the opportunity to say here, as I've said many other places throughout the state, that I hope the voters, first in the Republican primary, and secondly in the election, will make certain that Jack Javits is reelected to the United States Senate. And Jack, to the extent that I can, in any way whatsoever, I want to help. I'm pleased to see people here who are also willing to do the same on your behalf. They understand fine record that you've achieved, the great accomplishments that you you have earned and the recognition that is deserving. And so I say as deeply, as strongly as I possibly can, whatever help you can give Jack to ensure his renomination and re-election is not only good for New York City, it's not only good for New York State, but believe me, it's important from the point of view of 49 other states in this country. Thank you very much. Now, if I may, I would like to introduce not only my friend, but a person for whom I have the greatest admiration as well as the greatest affection, your Senator Jack Javits.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Thanks to all my friends, my staff, my contributors, past and prospective, and the officials of my own campaign. Al Marshall has stepped up the bat, though he has a thousand other things to do. Fred Rose, who heads my finance committee. Linda DeRolay lent me her daughter. And so many others. You, including with great pride and affection, John Trubin, my former law partner, who at this stage of life nonetheless took over the direction of this campaign. And I'm very grateful because I've had some problems with some of the leaders in New York, that Vince Albano and Jack Muratori have come here today, respectively, Manhattan and Queens, and that I'm also very grateful the political risk involved to Angelo Arculio, the minority leader of our city council, who notwithstanding the views of his own county chairman, has come here today and has helped me in this campaign. For myself, I don't think that I would need to leave my children and my wife anything when I pass on, other than what President Ford said about me. And other than being introduced to my friends and to the citizens of our city and state by a former president of the United States, I reciprocate in every measure the affection and profound respect which the president has voiced. And it moves me very deeply. I really should say no more, but sit down and be grateful. But I would like just a moment or two of your time to emphasize something which he has said. He is not as liberal as I am. I don't believe I'm a liberal either. But I do believe that I'm in the progressive tradition of our party, which has three aspects. One, I'm hard-headed about money. Two, I believe in true equal opportunity. Everybody at the same starting line. Whatever may be their race, creed, color, or social condition. And third, I believe in the business system of the United States. And the reason for going back to the Senate is twofold. One, the exigencies which face the country, which are deeply serious. And second, the fact that having been given so much seniority, so much experience, and so many opportunities for those credit cards which are invaluable in politics, in a high-level deliberative body like the United States Senate. I could think of no time when I could use them to greater advantage for my people and my time than this one. So it's a collaborative effort between me and the people of our state, and then in turn of the nation, and because we are so powerful, of the world. Now, I can play, Mr. President, an interesting role. I am a Republican. I'm committed to Governor Reagan. I feel the American people want him very much to win. there will be a campaign to wage. This is a very key state. The governor might carry this state and he might not. I believe very deeply that I can have a great deal to do with his carrying it. And because that prospect will loom very decidedly on the horizon, and I speak here to one close friend who understands it so well, former Attorney General Lefkowitz, the campaign itself will bear an impact for me, which will be helpful to Governor Reagan, in keying them to what needs to be done in the industrial states. It's very much more vivid when you're a candidate. You can advise. I've been appointed a member of Governor Reagan's Committee on Foreign Policy with very gratifying expressions of respect for me in that field by Governor Reagan himself. But it's not the same thing as when your ox is being gored in a decisive state like New York. Then the candidate listens, and I hope he will, because I think I can help him. And basically, I proceed on the premise that the people of this state want to elect Governor Reagan president if he let them. And that's the big issue, if he let them. Because this is a liberal state, not necessarily in the old-fashioned terms of liberal, but a state which is innovative, lively, and very anxious to get on whatever new road indicates the new day in which we live. And I have done my utmost in all these years to accommodate to those views, at the same time holding fast to the few Republican principles that I've described to you. Now, if elected, I never say when, I haven't in 34 years. If elected, I respect the voter too much. I believe that I can be of inestimable service to my party in the Senate. Many bridges have to be built between different wings of our party. And it is not for naught that Barry Goldwater has appeared so gratifyingly for me on television, although ideologically we are considered to be poles apart. Really, we're not. We're in thorough agreement upon the basic principles of our party. And I welcome him as much as he welcomes me in the amalgam of thought which will give those principles the best opportunity for being put into practice. And so the bridges need to be built. Innovation is infinitely more important than money, though it's not often recognized as such. Money is what we lawyers call fungible goods. Anybody can have money in the sense of making it available, but few are chosen to have innovative minds. And our party needs innovation. For example, there will be an enormous reconciliation between management and labor, which is now incident to the reindustrialization of our country, which is already decided. There's no longer any argument about it. A struggle which I've personally waged for years, and which in the last 4 years I had such a wonderful position to propagate as the chairman of the Republican Senator's Task Force on the nation's economy. We've been beating this drum since 77. Now it's come to pass. Now to reconcile labor and management and to determine what labor is going to get out of reindustrialization. What labor is afraid of is that all it's going to get is a speed up. Therefore, it may throw itself across the tracks in order to stop it. It's necessary to have the confidence of labor without buttering them up or without being necessarily for what they're for in order to work out this problem. I won't amuse you today with the details, but suffice it to say that I recognize it. And so I hope in this and in many other things, at home and abroad, to be able to serve an extremely effective role, possible perhaps for no one else. There's no such job as mine in the Senate. Someone else will come along to replace me, but it will not be the same thing. Times and problems differ. But I have a unique capability and a unique chance in the Senate if returned. I really will be able to be an annealing flame, I hope, and also a very cohesive force to persuade a majority of 100, which once they vote to organize the Senate, works by coalitions. You can't carry anything in the Senate of the United States without the votes of the minority. I hope it'll be the Democratic minority next time out. But you can't do a thing without a representative number of votes of the minority. It just can't work. And with that kind of a system, you can see the critical importance of being able to reconcile points of view. So, Mr. President, I'm deeply grateful. My wife and children will be deeply grateful to have heard these words, which will be a great heritage to them, much greater than anything else I can leave them. And for me, the inestimable privilege of again serving this country, literally at the peak of my powers. Those little bugs that have eaten at my stomach muscles seem to have fed my brain, Mr. President. and I really feel very much up to it, and with lots of zest for the job. Believe me, I haven't mixed it up in this campaign in a way which is rather foreign even to us as politicians, if I didn't feel so deeply about the value which I could give my country in going back. And I'm grateful to my friends for having rallied round, and knowing them as I do, Mr. President, and knowing you as I do, the only thanks you want is for me to win this primary, win the election, and go on to do the things which God equipped me best to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. It's hard to say anything after that, I guess. But we do have a man who's assigned to say something after that. The man who's responsible for it being warmer in here than would otherwise be, Mr. Secretary Frank Zog.
Thank you.
Good morning. I can't add very much to what you already know about the contributions that our friend Jack Javits has made to my state and your state and to the country. There are some things that happen that I think, however, people such as in this room don't see from day to day. Maybe even Senator Javits doesn't recall it, but I sure do. It takes me back to the middle of the 70s when we were in the trenches trying to put this country on a sensible energy course. And after an arduous month of debate with the Congress on a very important point, I had just given up any compromise and left for California to speak to a group in northern San Francisco. And as I was going into this compound called Bohemian Grove, where they hardly had a telephone and not much in plumbing, and those of you who have been there, I thought I'd just check in to Washington before I evaporated. And I called, and there was a message to call Senator Javits.